We're getting there. All right. So I'm going to move on to the next part of the agenda. And first thing we wanted to do, so now we're going to get into some inventory discussion. A couple of things I wanted to bring up tonight. A little bit of background information that I did not bring up at the last meeting when we had my presentation on some of the basic background information. But there are a bunch of submerged lands leases in Rockland Harbor. People don't know what submerged lands leases are. When you have a project that goes out into the submerged lands of the state of Maine, you do have to get a lease or an easement from the Bureau of Submerged Lands.
Can you explain why?
Yeah, because it's the people's land. We own it. We all do. And in order to use that and occupy that space, we have to have basically a license or an easement from the state of Maine to do that. So as an example, if you have a pier that goes out beyond the low water line, so it's low tide out is all the public land. And if you have a pier or a project that goes out beyond that low tide line, you have to get it's a lease.
Annual lease.
Yeah, they don't like
wage compensation.
Yep.
Can you make that bigger? No,
I can try. This is a Google Maps. I was going to actually. This is the list of all the easements, so we can put that up on the web. So there's easements and leases, and I think back to the map. The reason why I wanted to show the map. Whoops! Totally did not mean to do that. Is that it really corresponds quite well with, you know, all the waterfront users that you would expect to have easements because they're out beyond the low water line.
And with that permit comes an annual fee for most of them, so that the state submerged lands is taking in a certain amount of money based on the income that somebody gets from those submerged lands leases.
Yep, and part
if it's
of
commercial.
That, part of the fee actually goes to fund grant projects that some of us have benefited from in the past.
Actually paid for the boat ramp rehabilitation this year.
So the Bureau of Submerged Lands is an important resource and also an important agency, which we'll get into in a little bit anyway. But the regulatory structure of the water.
So I imagine that list of leaseholders would be an appendix to what we're writing.
Yep. Yeah, I got this right from them.
Excellent.
Actually, this map is right from them, too. This is a Google map, and I did not get the file for it, but I'll get the PDF, so you can put that up.
Yeah, it's kind of a living document. A lot of people extend their piers every year, so it's going to change quite frequently.
And does the city have any regulation in that or not, or is it just the state?
That's where we were talking about having some sort of committee or board at some point.
So let's save the policy discussion for the second half of the project. Yeah. At this point, we're just gathering information on who regulates what.
Well, I think it does sort of transition into the next part of the topic, which is the regulatory. I have actually prepared a regulatory matrix, which I'm going to hand out because you're never going to be able to follow it on the screen.
Can you try to put it on the screen?
Yeah, it will be on the screen also. Yep. I just wanted to also point out a couple of things as we're going over this. Not that we're going to zoom in on this map, but I did show this was the map that we showed last time to kind of just set the stage for how the water side of the harbor looks with mooring areas and anchorage areas. Channels, those kinds of things. Made some adjustments to that based on conversations I've had with Matt and Ed. So we might have to put a revised version of that up on the website because there's a few areas like I think I had this city-owned property like way down here last time. It's really up here. Trying to pull out the public access and reoriented some of the channels a little bit.
Noel, can you just explain what the color coding represents?
These represent existing mooring areas, orange. These things right here, with the lines in them, sort of the light blue color, those represent anchorage areas or special anchorage areas that are federally designated anchorage areas. interesting that one of them, of course, overlaps one of our busier mooring areas. The green represents potential areas of expansion of mooring areas. This little line right here represents where I would say, I think this is like a designated as this is a closed mooring area. In other words, it's full, whereas out here it is not. And this open area right here is an anchored area that kind of partially falls within the water of Rockland, but also Owl's Head. The blue over here, these are just the public sites. Yeah. Tried to point those out. Tried to highlight those. This is the main channel. This is also a dredged channel area. Try to pull out areas that are used to be part of the dredge but aren't anymore. I think I missed one. And so I got to add that in. So anyway, the purpose of this map is really to set the stage for conversations we're going to have later, but it's important for everybody to know like where things are in the harbor.
Noel?
Yes?
One of the things that stands out to me is that the mooring area you have along the Rockland Breakwater,
yep,
never seen it used as such. It's also the primary, half of the primary lobstering ground in the city.
Yeah, I would love to put a pin in that observation because I think it's important, but
yeah,
what
yeah,
I'm trying to reflect
and lobstering basically are exclusive during the summer.
Yep. What I'm trying to reflect right now in this plan is basically what's proposed, what is supposed to be existing in the harbor. That doesn't mean we can't and shouldn't have discussions about how those things should change. I'm just painting that picture. So that's why I want to put a pin in. It's a good observation.
Just for reference, there's hardly any moorings in that mooring field right now.
I know, but I'm saying, looking at growth, it's going to have to be designated a mooring field.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to have this kind of conversation because, unfortunately, the public cannot hear half of it. So let's just try and stick it to those that can be heard. I appreciate what you're saying, Ron, but okay, we sort of, and it also does take us beyond to a place where we're not ready at yet, but we will be.
No one's keeping a parking lot list of stakeholder input received, and it'll get inserted and discussed in the right place down the road when we have the policy discussion.
Yep.
All right. So I'm going to try to make sure that I have my regulatory matrix somewhere, which I thought I did. I can pull that up. While I'm doing that, got some handouts. Maybe Matt, you can hand these out. I'm going to hold that one for a second. So what Matt is handing out is...
thank you.
Thanks. So, I'm not sure, I'm going to zoom out on it. I mean, this is why I wanted to hand this out. So this is like a tabloid-sized matrix so we can all read it. And essentially, what I've tried to do is set the stage for people to kind of understand like who the agencies are in the harbor that would kind of regulate harbor activities. So that's the first page with all the text on it. You'll see that the City of Rockland plays a role, the Department of Environmental Protection, the Department of Economic and Community Development. There's lots of different agencies that play different roles in the harbor. And I wanted people to kind of understand what those roles are. And then the next page is a matrix of what projects and agencies might, illicit activities or projects, and what agencies might be involved in those specific projects. So, in a couple of different ways. Their permitting authority, their advisory roles, their informational resources, their potential funding sources. This is a pretty broad brush of who is involved in the harbor.
Could you just go over some of the acronyms on page 2?
Yep, page 2.
Yeah, we should probably write... Oh, he has written them all out. They're on the left hand.
No, the acronyms. along the top.
But if you look on the first page.
Right on the first page.
ACOE, that means the Army Corps of Engineers.
Got
the first one is DEP. The other one is DEP, that's Department of Environmental Protection.
Got that.
MHPC is Maine Historic Preservation Commission. BSL is Bureau of Submerged Lands.
I have a question. How many of these are federal versus state?
Yep. Army Just Corps of Engineers is federal.
You know what?
That's a good question. Is it color code by federal, state, local?
Yep. I can actually sort this differently or color code it by.
Good point, Kevin.
Yeah, by which ones are federal and which ones aren't. Okay. And you say, if you go right across, the city is local, obviously. And the Army Corps is federal, DEP, MHPC, BSL, DIFW, DMR, DACF, those are all state.
They don't know what all those are, though, right?
Yep.
Marine Resources.
DMR is Department of Marine Resources. DACF is the Department of Agricultural Conservation and Forestry. The DOT is the Department of Transportation.
Is on the first page or this radiation and the thing?
Yep, I try to put it on the first page too. So, in case you're looking at the second page, I'm just going on. So EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, that's federal. The MGS is the Maine Geological Survey. NOAA is federal. Floodplain is the Maine Floodplain Program. It's a state agency. USGS is a federal agency about geology. The USCS, is, CG, is actually the Coast Guard.
Ooh.
Sorry. U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is USFWS. The Coastal Program is the Maine Coastal Program. And the DECD is the Maine Department of Economic and Community Development. So let me just run through just the highlights of what each of those agencies do. That's also on the first page. So just, the city has a role.
Just so I can be clear, the Department of Environmental Protection, you're talking about the state agency there.
Yep.
So all of those that start with department, those were all state agencies.
Yep. Yep.
The last five on the front page.
Yes.
Potentially cluster by local, state, and federal, and then be alphabetical within a cluster. That might make it easier for folks who aren't familiar.
Yeah, again, definitely draft format, so happy to change it around. So the city has a role in a bunch of different ways in terms of what activities occur on the harbor, but they have a planning board, which reviews applications for waterfront activities on land. To make it consistent with the zoning rules, but also with piers and wharfs and other sort of uses extending beyond the harbor. There's the city is responsible for for regulating mandatory shoreline zoning standards, which are derived from state guidelines through the DEP. The city also has the code enforcement officer, which issues building permits. The city has the Harbor Commission, which has a sort of an overview, oversight role on the water side. And there's also the port, I'm going to say it right, port district. The district, right. Which is more of a passenger and
freight
entity, which is actually a legislatively created entity.
State legislatively created.
Yes, it's a state legislatively created entity. The Department of Environmental Protection plays a lot of different roles in the waterfront and on the water. Some of it's advisory, some of it's informational, but a lot of it is regulatory. So, for example, when you have a project so again, some feedback about my use of the microphone. So when you have a project that's on the water side, you have to get a permit, which is a Natural Resource Protection Act permit. All projects within the shoreline zone are usually considered a full, I call it a full NRPA permit, but it's a big, thick permit application where you have to do an alternatives analysis, think about minimizing and avoiding impacts to the natural resources. They're very focused on the natural resources. They're focused on historic preservation and also visual impacts to the harbor is a big deal for them.
And we're talking about the same area that would be the submerged lands that you referenced earlier?
Some submerged land stuff is also DEP stuff, but also like, so if you're doing a pier, for example, and I actually have another handout, I don't want to confuse the issue, but I'll hand this out in just a second, but if you're doing a pier project, for example, you have to get a permit from the city through the planning board, a building permit from the code officer, probably some input from Matt in terms of navigational hazards, and then you have to get a permit from the DEP, which is a full NRPA permit application, and that is because it's there's an impact to the coastal wetland, which is essentially where the water meets the land. That permit application is also the same application you would submit to the Army Corps of Engineers, but not the same application you would send to the Bureau of Submerged Lands. So when you're doing a pier, there's like three or four different agencies you need to go to. State permitting. There's state permitting through the DEP. There's a potential easement if you're impacting over a certain area of submerged lands. I think it's 500 square feet of submerged lands on a permanent basis. And actually, even if you do more than 500 square feet on a temporary basis, you have to get an easement from the submerged lands too. And then there's an Army Corps permit, which is the same application that you would send to DEP. You just send to the Army Corps, and they involve other federal agencies in their review as well, including also the Native American tribes in the state of Maine. You have to consult with them through the federal process. Maine Historic Preservation gets involved through that, where you send them a copy of your application, and they'll review their historic database to determine whether or not you're going to have any effect on any historic resources. Oftentimes in the coastal environment, they don't have all the data they need, so they'll ask you to do some more surveys of the waterfront of the area, the project area, to determine whether or not you're going to be affecting any historic resources, and then they'll put some requirements on. If you do encounter any archaeological resources, you have to stop the project and notify them. DEP consults with marine resources in terms of timing of activities. So if you're in a certain area where there's fish spawning is an important thing to consider. So timing of activity is really important. Thinking about floodplain, we're going to be talking about that a meeting or two from now. But through the city, you'll get a floodplain management permit sometimes, depending on whether or not you're considered a structure. A lot of times piers aren't considered structures that require floodplain permits. But if you're putting something over the water body, you might have to consider, you know, your elevations in the flood zone. So you still need a permit for that often. So a lot of the agencies that I've noted here are advisory and involved in all of these projects that we're going to be talking about. But the city, the big regulatory factors through the Natural Resource Protection Act, the Army Corps, through all the acts that they have that were part of the things. And those are the two main ones that are going to be involved in any project that you do in the water. Breakwater, retaining walls, shoreline stabilization projects, which is basically riprap. So if you have an eroding shoreline and you want to stabilize it, that's the same application process as a pier. Hmm. Piers, when you get into just saying, I'm a residential boater and I want to get a mooring, recreational private moorings can get a permit through the harbor master in designated mooring areas or wherever the harbor master decides is a good spot for them. If you're a commercial or rental mooring, you have to get a permit also through the Army Corps.
If you have any questions about NERPA and requirements with all these other agencies, we're actually going through this process for the fish pier, so you can come down to my office and I can run you through every little detail.
Okay.
There's a lot to it.
Yeah. I'm going to hand this out now. This is a. I'll hand it around both ways. There we go. I might have to keep going, but this next round of handouts, just because I love confusing everybody with lots of paper, is basically what I tried to do is take a project and then put which agencies and what they might have to, what application process that they would have to go through. So I tried to pick a couple water projects, and also some waterfront development type projects. So just so you can get a sense of, you know, this is the type of regulatory environment that we're working with. The next phase in this analysis is sort of looking at what other communities might do in terms of modifying their regulatory process. So right now, when I look at Rockland's rules, not the zoning rules, those are different, like zoning being allowed uses, what uses are allowed in certain areas of the harbor, but sort of the permitting structure and dimensional standards. You know, it's pretty simple when you're talking about it here in Rockland right now. It's not a lot of meat to it. It's just essentially a copy of whatever shoreline zoning says. Piers and wharfs have to get a permit from the planning board, pretty much, essentially. But there's no, I think it's over 20 feet, actually, in Rockland. Piers over 20 feet need a permit to the planning board. So.
On the last page of the second handout, is NPRA really the same thing as NRPA?
Yep.
Okay, it's also on the first page. So they're the same. They're just typos. Yep. Just okay, that's great. Thanks.
Yep, NRPA. Thank you.
So did I hear you say only piers over 20 feet that's require the way it, a permit?
The way it sounds like in the ordinance is piers over 20 feet are triggered to go to planning board.
Okay.
I'm sure a building permit would be required for the CEO.
That might be worth a visit with John Rood. Absolutely. And annotating whatever this matrix becomes to be a little more specific.
Yeah, what I've been trying to slog through is the ordinance as it relates to all these waterfront activities. So I didn't dive into the allowed uses chart yet.
No problem.
But the dimensional standards and those things are pretty simple. And the complicating fact is you have everything within 250 feet of the shore, of the water, has to meet shoreland zoning standards, state of Maine mandated shoreland zoning standards. And so within that, in Rockland, you have that 250-foot overlay, but you also have multiple zones that are sort of all related to that. And some areas have different standards than others, and they all have to kind of match up with shoreland zoning standards too. So it's a bit of a back and forth, trying to understand it, at least from my perspective, as a newbie.
I would make one observation that the good thing in Maine is that all of these agencies know each other.
Absolutely.
Everybody knows each other, and when you make one application, it goes to a lot of different agencies at once.
Yep.
It's not like you have to apply to every single one of these agencies, and they talk to each other over coffee.
Yep, that's why I put, what I tried to put on the second page when you look through that, you know, most of them are A, advisory, or I, informational. Just to say, you know, they're going to be advisory to the permitting agency. So the DEP is the permitting agency, but the Maine Historic Preservation is an advisory role to that permitting agency or any one of those other agencies. And then there are certain departments which have agencies under them, so like the Bureau of Submerged Lands is part of the Department of Agriculture, Conservation, Forestry, for example.
And it may seem like there's a lot of agencies, but a lot of these agencies are only one or two people.
Yes.
Bureau of Submerged Lands is, what, three people or something now?
Three people, I think.
Yeah.
Yep. And they're super helpful. So if you were doing a specific project, they're really, really helpful. They can be very helpful. Army Corps has been very helpful. I actually talked to the Army Corps, shared this matrix with them just to get their perspective on it. Carol DeBello from Bureau of Submerged Lands is the one that sent me all this stuff about the submerged lands leases and easements in Rockland. So I do want to point out the one complicating one is we started to talk about this a little bit next time, and just for informational purposes, because we're going to probably get into this, you know, later on in the process, but when you think about a dredging project, there's a somewhat more detailed analysis that you have to do for dredging projects. Maintenance projects, so if we went in to maintain what's already dredged, that's still, it's a permitting, a lesser permitting process through the Army Corps, but you still have to decide how you're going to dispose of the dredge material. So if it's in an approved site, I think the Army Corps has like two or three approved sites up and down the coast, and outside of Auckland might be one of them. So if you decide you're going to dispose of that material in one of the approved sites, it's easier. But if we were doing a new dredge, you have to, and I think a maintenance dredge actually, you have to do some analysis of the material that you're disposing of. So when you're disposing of dredge materials, the first thing you need to do is test the area that you're going to dredge to make to understand what the environmental conditions of that area are. Is there what pollutants are in the soils? You know, how do you do that? So you have to go in a barge and do a core drill down into the soil, pull out that information, send that off to a laboratory. They'll send the results back to the Army Corps, and then the Army Corps essentially tells you where you can dispose of that material because it meets a certain set of standards. Yes.
Like for instance with the fish pier, so we have to take samples at the fish pier where we intend to dredge, and then also in the offshore dumping ground if we wanted to dump in that specific area, and they need to compare the two biological samples to make sure they all work together.
Is that the project that the fish pier is going under right now, a dredging project?
Part of it. That's part of the project.
Yeah, and that can take a while. Yeah, some of that testing is a
very expensive.
Yeah, especially on that. And I would suspect that Rockland Harbor, based on the history, probably has a few environmental.
There's a few.
Impossible.
In the soil. So anyway, so yeah, I mean, there's a lot of already existing regulatory framework in the harbor, and it seems like a complex web, but really there's a couple of main agencies, and once you hit those main agencies, it all starts to work itself out. Questions? It's a lot to take in. I'm sort of breezing over it. Well, I think what I'd like to do is just have you take a look at it. Definitely room for edits and clarifications. But it's really for background purposes in terms of thinking about who regulates the harbor when we start to talk about various other aspects of it. Who's involved in regulating? And then the next step is really thinking about, okay, what are other communities do that's different than what Rockland does? There's other examples. So just because the shoreline zoning standards say one thing doesn't mean you can't be a little more restrictive or regulatory. But those are things to think about.
So really and truly what this is very useful for would be for us knowing what the scope and the boundaries of our work can possibly be.
Yeah, are there any things in the as we're thinking about it, are there things in the existing regulatory structure that we're concerned about that we want to...
What is puzzling is I look under on the second page of the matrix, halfway down it says endangered species. There's nothing there but informational resources.
Yep.
So I'd be very surprised if they weren't a little better protected than that. What are we looking at?
Yep. So what I mean by that is when you apply for a permit from the DEP, let's just say, or the Army Corps, you're going to get information from other agencies. I should probably put an A and an I on both of those because there'll be agencies that will advise you about those endangered species. But I'm also suggesting that those are agencies that you can go to find out where endangered species or other species are mapped.
But there is, of course, no permitting. That being the nature of an endangered or protected species.
Not necessarily, yeah. It's not an activity, I guess.
Right.
Yep.
But it gets picked up in your permits for other things if you're going to interfere with it anyway.
When you apply for the NERPA, when you go through the NERPA process, they're going to look at all species.
Yeah. I may want to change the title of the left-hand column because I just wanted to pick things that, you know,
subjects,
these are subjects that might come up. So where do you go for that?